journey into the Bible and explore its hidden text and rich wisdom. Join Adel Kazilski Mondays at 1 p.m. for the trip of a lifetime.
Shavua Tov, Chodesh Tov to all our Chai FM listeners. I'm glad to be back in the driving seat. Had a little bit of a hiatus, spending some family time. Glad to be back learning Torah with you every Monday. And as always, I welcome your questions. If you have any comments, if you have any ideas that you want me to talk about, obviously pertinent to what we're learning, please feel free. You can SMS on 34519, or you can send a telegram on 061-895-1019. We are still preparing ourselves for the receiving of the Torah in terms of our text. We are learning that we are learning about all the different miracles that that are happening. And everything that prepared the Jews for receiving of the Torah. We know that the receiving of the Torah was in fact a one-time only experiential situation where millions and millions and millions of people experienced the same thing. And that is one of the reasons that we can argue that Torah is authentic, is that whenever somebody comes and says, no, there's prophecy, this is what has been said, ask yourself, how many people heard that prophecy? Nowhere in the annals of history has there ever been documented another situation where millions, literally 12, 13, 14 million people heard and saw and experienced God. And what we're doing is we're going through the 40 miracles that happened that allowed for the giving of the Torah. Where we left off was that we had finished 22 of the miracles. My intention is to get through the last, 17 of them. So let's hit the road. The 23rd miracle is that when the Jews left Egypt, most of them were maimed. They were crippled. Why? Because they had been forced to do brutal labor. There was obviously no safety measures, no bricks. Bricks and beams could fall down on them, could pull out an eye, break a foot, break a hand. And when they stood 7 weeks later at Mount Sinai, God said, it's not proper to give the Torah to cripples. People were physically really, really hurt. So he demanded the angels to descend on them. And it said that everybody got restored that what was wrong with them. The blind began to see. How do we know this? And everything that I'm telling you, by the way, has contextual proof. We can go into the verses. How do we know the blind were able to see? The Torah says all the people saw the sounds. Now, that is something that pertains to the blind seeing. The deaf also began to hear, as Moses later told the Israelites. God spoke these words to all of you who were assembled on the mountain. Those who were crippled were able to stand and were able to walk. As it's written, the people stood erect at the foot of the mountain. So in general, the people became like totally new individuals. All their defects, all their wounds were completely healed. Also, to understand that amongst the Israelites, there was no one with leprosy, no one was lame, no one was dumb, no one was deaf, no one suffered a mental illness, no one suffered a deficiency. Every single person that stood there was perfect, both physically and mentally. And that's why we see a verse in chapter 15, it's actually verse 26, where it says, all the sicknesses I have caused you to have in Egypt, I will no longer cause you to have, for I am your God, your healer. So that is something that we need to understand. So if somebody goes and says, well, you're telling me there were 15 million people that heard this, but maybe half of them didn't hear and half of them didn't see and half of them couldn't walk. And no, every single person stood there in complete perfection. The 24th miracle was that when God was about to give the Torah to the Jewish people, he brought all the idols that were in the world to Sinai, and he made them bow down before the divine presence. By the way, this is going to happen as well when Mashiach comes. He should come right now. Any idols that people worshipped, they will be brought down. And I just want to segue a little bit to understand that what today do we have idols? No, we don't necessarily, not always, but not necessarily do we have idols of stone and idols of wood, and we don't have ceremonies where we go bowing down to them, even though, yes, there are in some religions where that happens. But a lot of our idols are, in a sense, metaphoric, okay, insofar as we worship fame, we worship money, we worship stature, we worship clothing, we worship cars, we worship all of these things. And when it says that this will too happen in the Messianic age, where the idols will come and bow before the divine presence, what this is saying is that, in fact, we will come to a realization in the Messianic time that all of these things are for naught and nothing. You are not a better person if you are wearing a fancy label of clothing or driving a fancy car, or if your name is Professor, or if you've got 20 billion rand in the bank. Those are the things that don't define who you are. What defines you is your good deeds, your stature, who you are as a person. So just like it says that God brought all the idols in the world to Sinai, okay, what that was showing that at that point in time, the truth was so apparent that all the idols just collapsed in front of the divine, the divine presence. Number 25. It said that of all the hundreds of thousands of women who were present at Mount Sinai, not one of them were menstruating at the time. Why was that? To show that they were in a heightened level of holiness. Again, this is a discussion in and of itself, but generally, when a woman is menstruating, we know that there is a certain level of unholiness, because she is discarding a potential life. And the way that a woman reverses that is through the laws of Taharat HaMishpacha, the laws of family purity, where after 7 clean days, after at least a minimum of 5 days of menstruating, which means a minimum of 12 days, a woman can immerse herself in a mikveh and restore that level of holiness. I am stating categorically, this is not about clean and unclean. It's not a discussion at all. It actually has, there is no connotation to that. It's a spiritual level we are talking about. And so what is being said over here was that all the women were in a heightened level of spirituality. So that is something that one needs to keep in mind. Number 26, God tells Moses, the people will hear when I speak with you. And this was an indication and a miracle that showed that all the people present, great and small, experienced prophecy, meaning they heard God's voice, even though most of them were not prepared for the prophetic experience. Generally, when one prepares for a prophetic experience, one has to go through a process. Even all the prophets, they either went into a state of meditation, or they fell asleep, or they had it in a dream. Here, all the millions of people at Sinai, great and small, were elevated to the level of prophecy through the merit of Moses, and they became prophets even without undergoing what usually was a usual preparation for people. And this was a result of the holiness of Mount Sinai. And that's why it says in Deuteronomy about Moses telling the Israelites, face to face, God spoke with you.
This is Mystical Text with Adel Kazilski.
Okay, let us continue with our miracles. Miracle number 27. This is kind of like a carrying on from miracle number 26, in that it says the people at Mount Sinai had a higher experience of prophecy higher even than the great prophets like Isaiah and Ezekiel or Yeshayahu and Yechezkel, because these prophets only had a spiritual experience when they were able to see with their mind's eye. At Har Sinai, the Israelites were able to literally see with their own eyes. Now, you can ask, what was it that they were able to see? So we've got a thing called the Merkava, the divine chariot. It's a very mystical concept. There are four animals around the Merkava. They were able to see that. They were able to understand all those mysteries. And when we compare prophecy, if you recall, we said that they saw prophecy at the Red Sea. When the sea split, they were able to come to a level of prophecy that they had never seen before. But this supersedes it. And really what we could say, from time of creation until the revelation at Sinai, there was no such powerful revelation in the world, because here they were completely cleansed of any, and it's this Kabbalistic terminology, yeah, the taint of the serpent, which means that the people that stood at Har Sinai were as spiritual as angels. Okay. Yes, did they have heightened prophecy at the Dead Sea, at the Red Sea? Yes, they did, but it still had a bit of a taint of the serpent. Here, what we see is that when God came down on Har Sinai, he was revealing himself in such a sense that the people there would understand that the entire purpose of creation was only fulfilled once we received the Torah at Sinai. So there was kind of like this fulfillment of the joy of creation, and nobody received anything as powerful as that until that point in time, which is actually quite incredible, because I don't believe that we have the ability or even the understanding today to actually understand how powerful this revelation was. In fact, you know, part of this miracle was the fact that we said that the Israelite vision was not impaired, but what they saw. Now, we know that today the only type of blessing and type of thing that we get is when we have the Kohanim, our priests, in the shul, stand there and recite their blessing. And we know that it is our minhag, it is our custom, to cover our eyes with the talis during the blessing. That's what the men do. The kids climb underneath it. Women face, but look away. Don't look directly at the Kohanim. Why? Because it says that when they are reciting their blessing, God forbid, your vision can be harmed, because the powerful blessing that is coming is very, very powerful and needs to be received on a much deeper level than a physical interaction. Now, at Har Sinai, the people actually saw the radiance of the divine, and it didn't harm them. That's why it says all the people saw the voices, and it also says God came down on Har Sinai before the eyes of the people. So the first thing we did learn was that, in fact, everybody was healed. Everybody had the ability to see, but this was a seeing beyond anything that we ever understood. In fact, we're told even further that when the Torah was given, Moses attained an unimaginably great spiritual height that even the greatest angels like Michael and Gabriel were afraid to gaze at his face. And that's why we know it says, of all the great people that have ever lived, Moses was the greatest. Why? Because he spoke to God face to face. No other human being has ever been able to do that. But nevertheless, for us to understand that the revelation was so exceedingly powerful that even a normal human being achieved an enormously high state of prophecy and seeing things. And now we go on to the 28th miracle, which again is an extension more of this prophetic vision, that the miracle was that even infants in their mother's womb were able to see the glory of God at the revelation of Sinai. How did that happen? We're told in the Midrash that all the wombs of all the pregnant women became transparent, so their unborn fetuses were able to see and hear everything. And that's why we know that the Torah is something that can be passed and is passed to this day, to 2025, right now. I'm teaching Torah that was revealed to us at Har Sinai. So everybody was able to go and see and understand and perceive, from the unborn fetus to the Torah scholars. They were able to fathom the mysteries of the Torah at Har Sinai, and it was absolutely what is called in Hebrew Yirat HaRomemut, that there was this God's greatness that was perceived there, that nobody would think other than, how can I dare to disobey the master of the universe? It was just so apparent. It was so awesome. It was so clear. There was absolutely no question in anybody's minds. The 29th miracle is an interesting one. It says, at first, God expressed all the Ten Commandments in a single word. Now, this is something, obviously, that human speech cannot describe, nor can the human ear even grasp, okay? Because how can you hear everything that I'm saying now mushed into one word, and for you to get to understand it, even though I've given it to you in one word? So this was an incredible miracle. It says all the people that were there understood all the commandments, even though they were given it in one word. And that's why, very interestingly, we know that when we come to Shabbat and we sing the famous song, Lecha Dodi, we say, Shamor Vezachor Bedibur Echad. Okay, that keep and remember was one word. Hishmiyanu Kel HaMeyuchad. It was declared to us by a unitary God. Now, this is where it is telling us that, in fact, we know there are two mitzvot in the Torah. The mitzvot of Zachor et Yom HaShabbat, to remember the Shabbat. And then there is the mitzvah of Shamor et HaShabbat, to keep the Shabbat. Now, just again, I'm going to segue just to explain this concept a little bit more. What does it mean to keep the Shabbat and to remember the Shabbat? Keeping the Shabbat is the mitzvah for us to know all the prohibitions and the allowances of how we keep the Shabbat. I'm allowed to do this, but I'm not allowed to do that. And it really revolves around the 39 melachot of Shabbat, the 39 creative acts that we perform during the week, and all its derivatives. There are many, many derivatives. Again, a concept that I can't expound on completely because it's not within the breadth of this conversation. But keeping the Shabbat is us understanding all the ramifications around how our behavior is on Shabbat, and what we can and what we cannot do. Zachor et HaShabbat, remembering the Shabbat, is different. It means that Shabbat needs to be foremost in our mind the entire week. How do we fulfill the mitzvah of Zachor et HaShabbat? For example, we are told that if we go to the shops early in the week and we see something special that we know is a delicacy or something that is a treat, we can pick it up and say, this is L'kuvot Shabbos. This is for the honor of Shabbos. And in that way, we remember the Shabbat. That is one way to keep something that you see during the week and dedicate it to the holiness, to the use of it early on Shabbat. Another way is that we always count towards Shabbat. For those that daven, for those that pray, we know that every single morning we say a certain chapter of Tehillim that was said in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. And you will see there that there is accounting, and it's accounting towards Shabbat. Hayom Yom Shlishi B'Shabbat. Today is the third day towards the Sabbath. So the Shabbat is very central to us, and the way we remember it is we count that today is the third day towards Shabbat. I found something special towards Shabbat. The keeping of Shabbat is all the laws there. But coming back to what we're saying is that we heard all of this in one word. All of this that I've just told you, plus a lot more. And just to prove to you, just even on the mitzvahs of Shabbat, it says, Shamor b'zachor b'dibur echad. Shamor and b'zachor was said in one word. Hishmiyanu kel ha-meyuchad. We heard it from a unified God. So that one word encapsulated absolutely everything that that we heard. So that was an incredible miracle. I'm not sure that we can replicate that feat in any way today, where you can take a speech of half an hour, condense it into one word, drop it into the other person's mind, or let the other person hear and see it, and for the person to understand all the intricacies behind it. Right, miracle number 30. Okay. Moses' voice had to be unbelievably strong because everybody in the encampment had to hear it, even though there were so many millions of people present. You know, when we walk into a big shul and maybe there's 500 people in the shul, we know that it's impossible, right, to hear the chazan well, even if you're quiet, if you're sitting in one corner of the shul. Obviously, the further away you are from the chazan, the less you can hear. At Har Sinai, the tremendous gathering was able to hear and understand everything that Moshe Rabbeinu said. Now, this is an unbelievable miracle. We need to understand that the camp was so wide, we are told, that it would take a good 4.5 hour walk from one end to the other end. Okay? Which practically what we're saying over here is that the majority of the people were very far from Moshe Rabbeinu. And remember then, there was also all the noise, the tremendously loud sound of the shofar. There was the lightning. There was the thunder. There was all of those things that were happening. And in fact, the miracle was that they were able to hear everything as if they were standing right in front of what was being said. Okay, miracle number 31. In the Talmud, we are told that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi taught that with each word that God spoke, the Israelites would tremble at this fearsome, loud sound, and they would all be pushed backwards, right? It said they'd be pushed back 12 miles because it kind of like they ricocheted backwards because it was just so powerful. And even those at the end of the camp who were already 12 miles away from the mountain were so agitated, they went back another 12 miles. And so that's why we've got the verse, the people saw and shook and stood at a distance, meaning they were so agitated, they were thrown back, okay? And what happened while the Torah was being transmitted, that every time this happened, God would say to the angels, go down, help your brethren, bring them back. And that's why in Tehillim, we say, angels of hosts, they fly. That is to say that the angels came and they helped the Israelites, because they couldn't pull themselves back again. They fell back, and then they were schlepped forward again by the Malachim. They fell back, and that's how it went. Now, interestingly, the Hebrew for the angels of hosts is called Malchei Tzavaot. I'm saying it in the correct way, Tzavaot. Some people will say Tzavakot because it's a name of Hashem. But for purposes of teaching, I will use the proper name. Now, generally, when we look at the word for angels, Malchei is without an Aleph. is generally with an aleph. Malache. Here we've got Malche Tzabakot, which could mean Melech, not necessarily a angel, but could be Melech, which is a king, which is teaching us what? That it was in fact angels, but the king of the angels came to help. Who was pulling the Jews back again? It was none other than Michal and Gabriel, Michael and Gabriel, who are the greatest of all angels. And this again just shows you how great the Israelites were, that the angels of such a great stature came and descended to the physical world to help them. We're also told that a whole lot of legions of angels came with Michal and Gabriel, and they, in fact, two angels were designated to each Israelite. One placed its hand on the individual's heart to give him courage, and the other lifted his head so he could see the divine presence, which is quite incredible. And again, remember, a lot of this is metaphorical, not necessarily something that happened on a practical level. Maybe it did also happen on a practical level, but my understanding of this is that them placing their hand on the individual's heart to give him courage and lifting the person's head so he could see the divine presence is really symbolic of the fact that for us to embrace Torah, for us to learn about Torah, what we actually need to do is we need to apply both our mind and our heart. We need to find the courage. We need to have the expansiveness of allowing ourselves to be open enough to accept the understanding that God was trying to give to us. So it was pretty phenomenal that was happening.
This is Mystical Text with Adel Kazilski.
Okay, let's hit now miracle number 32. And here's something that's very interesting. We're told that the sun stood still on the day the Torah was given. And our sages teach us the sun stood still five times because of Moses' merit. One, at the time of the Exodus. Two, on the seventh day of Pesach when the Red Sea split. Three, when we battled Amalek in the desert. Now, when the Torah was given, and we will learn further on at the Battle of Sichon at the Arnon Brook. Now, the Rabbi Eliezer comments in the Talmud that in each of these cases, because the sun stood still, the day was as long as three normal days. And that's why there's also this thing of us having to have prepared for the Torah for 3 days. That's really, really interesting. There were other times when the sun stood still. We know with the famous battle with Joshua, then too, the sun stood still. Now, here's quite an interesting miracle. It says that on the day the Torah was given, this is miracle number 33, on the day the Torah was given, the dead were brought back to life, okay? And that the fact of the matter is that they were there so that everybody could understand and know the truth of the Torah. There were many, many people there. There were the actual physical people, the crowd that was sitting around Har Sinai. There were the people who had died before that came back to life, okay? And they were there to witness it. And in fact, we're also told that those who were going to come to life after the giving of the Torah, means all the way to us, our souls were there too. Meaning that, again, this revelation of godliness was for all mankind, for all time, for all people. And as I said, I don't believe that there is anybody that can deny that this was the greatest revelation of godliness that one could experience in this world. The 34th miracle is that with each of the 10 commandments, the air became filled with perfume. The Talmud asks, since the air was filled with perfume after the first commandment, how do you repeat the miracle? okay? Because you know that if somebody goes and sprays something in the air, it lingers there, it stays there. So when you do it again, just a couple of seconds later, it's going to nullify. So the Talmud answers that, in fact, after each commandment, the wind blew and swept the fragrance away to allow the new fragrance to come in. What did it smell like, and where did these perfumes go? So firstly, let's work out where the perfumes went. They were blown into the Garden of Eden. Why did God have to have fragrance there? Was because we kept on fainting. Okay, we kept on passing out. And so we know that one of the ways that we waken somebody up is we give them something strong to smell, snuff. I remember one time on Yom Kippur, I was feeling really, really quite blah. I was sitting in shul. I wasn't feeling good at all. And one of my congregants came and said, "Dinah, just, block your one nostril and smell this." And boy, did it revive me. So that is why there was fragrance coming, making its rounds. Number 35, the miracle that is recorded comes from the Midrash. It says, Rabbi Nechemiah said that when the Israelites heard the commandment, "Do not have any other gods but me," the Yetzer Hara was uprooted from their hearts, and they did not have any ulterior motives whatsoever, and they were destined to remain that way forever. Okay, which means that we could have and should have brought Mashiach. Then we were in the most perfected states. The Ten Commandments were so embedded in our minds. We remembered every word. We remembered every letter. Nothing was forgiven. Unfortunately, when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to receive the Torah, we fell suddenly, and we did the sin of the golden calf, which eventually we will get to, and that schlepped us down from this high spiritual state where we completely and absolutely understood things. And one of the proofs, by the way, everything that I'm telling you, I don't want you to think that it's just fantastical. It has proof. How do we know? Because it says, "Ani Hashem Elokecha, I am the Lord your God." Elokecha is the singular, as opposed to Elokechem. I'm the Lord your God, plural, which means that God associated with each and every individual, and each and every individual received an incredibly, incredibly high state. Miracle number 36, it says that God's voice were flames of fire, that the voice broke through the fire on the mountain, and that's how they were able to see each letter perfectly. So, for example, the first word of the Ten Commandments is Anochi, Aleph, Nun, Chaf, Yud. They were able to clearly see these letters, Aleph, Nun, Chaf, Yud. And that's why we say, for interestingly, we in the davening, we say when we sing Yigdal, okay, we say Ein lo demut haguf ve'ein lo guf, that God doesn't have a bodily form, and He is not a form. So you can then ask, then what were they seeing? If I'm telling you, they saw the Aleph, Nun, Chaf, and Yud. They said we're taught that they saw forms of letters coming from fire. Okay, and they were sore and they moved. Did they see God? No, they did not see God, because God does not have a bodily form, nor does He have a body.
This is Mystical Text with Adel Kazilski.
Okay, we've got maybe one or two more. Number 37, the miracle was that each word then was engraved on the tablets and was heard from one end of the world to the other. We will discuss the actual form of the Ten Commandments, but what we understand is that the letters actually remain suspended, meaning if you take a stone and you engrave a letter out, it went through right to the other side. And so, kind of like the letter was the empty space and it remained suspended, and you could read it the right way from both sides, which ordinarily it wouldn't happen. Miracle number 38, was that God's voice was heard and boomed from one end of the world to the other. As we have discussed with all the other miracles, it was very, very beneficial for the Israelites. Unfortunately, to the pagans, it was harmful. It said that kings and princes heard the voice. They quaked with fear. They fainted dead. Some of them actually died. So this voice was beneficial for those that wanted to embrace godliness. Those that didn't, unfortunately, didn't make it. Miracle number 39 is that the Erev Rab, that's the mixed multitude, that is the many pagans that joined the Israelites when we left Egypt, they didn't hear the Ten Commandments. And why was that a miracle? Because they caused a lot of trouble, and there was this entire thing of how can they not listen to the Torah and be part of the huge miracles? And the way that it worked was anybody who was enveloped in the clouds of glory were able to perceive and hear and feel and all the miracles. But those that were outside of the cloud of glory, such as the Erev Rav, were not meritorious. And finally, in the Midrash, this is number 40, Rav Pinchas says that all the people who heard God's voice at Har Sinai became like angels. They were not bitten by mosquitoes or lice. And the miracle extended so far that when they died, no worms could attack their body and their bodies did not decay. And that's why we say in the Ashrei, Ashrei Ha'am Shekacha Lo. Happy are the people who Hashem is their God. Now, if you take the word Shekacha, it has a numerical equivalence of 345. Okay, Shin is 300, Chaf and Chaf are 20 and 20, and He is 5. Moshe, Mem, Shin, He also makes up 345. And therefore, it's as if the verse is saying that the nation that has Moses amongst them is happy because he brought them to such greatness and to such holiness. And that's why the people of the desert are known as the Dor Dea, the generation of knowledge. So this concludes the 40 miracles that were happening. And please God, from next week, we're going to dissect more and eventually go through the meaning of each and every of the Ten Commandments. Thank you for joining me. Stay warm. Shavuot Tov. In the days now of the 9 days where we are in a community state of mourning, us not having the Beit HaMikdash, let us increase in acts of goodness and kindness, of bringing more light to the world. And please God, these days will be changed from days of mourning to days of rejoicing with the building of the Beit HaMikdash. Have a wonderful day. This is 101.9 Chai FM.